The Night Sky this month is part of the Jodcast. For the full issue of the Jodcast, please go to www.jodcast.net.
Welcome to the November Night Sky. It's not a month for planets, as we shall see, but nevertheless, the heavens do have some interest this particular month. And of course, as the evenings are drawing in, one can go out and observe. You don't have to stay up quite so late. Because of that, in the western sky, and still quite high up, once it's got fully dark, you see what's called the summer triangle. The three bright stars, Deneb in Cygnus, Vega in Lyra, and Altair in Aquila, forming a fairly prominent triangle in the western sky. Cygnus the Swan is one of the constellations that looks somewhat like what it's meant to be, although one has to say that the star Albireo, which is the head of Cygnus, doesn't really stand out very much. The brighter stars make up what's called the Northern Cross, and that's fairly obvious. Just below Cygnus, and to the sort of the lower left of Aquila, is a rather lovely little constellation called Delphinus the Dolphin. You have to imagine a dolphin leaping out of the sea. It also looks a bit like a kite with a tail. And if you move over to the south, you'll see not a particularly full area of sky, but four fairly prominent stars making up the constellation of Pegasus, the winged horse, which in fact we see upside down from the northern hemisphere. The top left-hand star of Pegasus is the starting point of the way to find our nearest large galaxy, the Andromeda Galaxy, or M31. Starting at Alpha Andromedae, Alpharats it's called, one moves up and to the left, two bright stars, turn sharp right, moves one star and then the same distance again, and you should see a milky glow. Easy in binoculars, even with your eye, should it be really quite dark. Above the Andromeda Nebula is the W-shaped constellation of Cassiopeia. And in fact, if you take the three lower right stars, they make a form of a pointer, which in fact leads you down to the Andromeda Galaxy. If, however, you work your way down towards the north, you come through a very rich area of the Milky Way to the constellation of Perseus. In between the two constellations is a rather lovely region which contains the Double Cluster, two rather beautiful star clusters, so close together that you can actually see them with binoculars easily together or even with a small telescope. Also, in the northeast, as the evening draws on, we have the lovely constellation of Taurus rising. In fact, the first things you'll see are the Pleiades cluster, a very young cluster, probably only about 70 million years old. With my eyes, which are fairly old ones, I can usually see about four or five stars, but you may well see nine, and they represent seven daughters and their mother and father in the mythological tale. Lovely to look at. Later on during the night, then the Hyades cluster with the bright star Aldebaran will appear, although it has to be said Aldebaran, the eye of the bull, Taurus the bull, is not in fact part of the Hyades cluster. It's a foreground star that's actually moving in a very different direction. So it's not a bad time to actually observe the sky. If in fact you stay up very late, you'll see Orion rising, and if you're up early before dawn, then that's nice and high in the southern sky. Okay, we'll have a look at the planets now, and as I said earlier, it's not really a very good month for planets. Virtually all of them, except Saturn, are either going behind the Sun or moving in front of it this month. So let's just run through them in order. Starting with Jupiter, that's actually in the constellation of Libra. It is passing behind the Sun during the early part of November. It is just possible you might pick it up about 30 minutes before dawn at the very end of the month, but honestly, it's probably not worth trying. Wait until December or January. Saturn, however, is the one planet that is easily visible, but basically it's best seen in the early hours of the morning when it's high in the south, but it's beginning to rise relatively early in the evening, and although it's not quite as bright as it has been in previous years, it's still worth observing. The reason why it's not as bright is because the rings, that obviously reflect quite a bit of light, are closing. Their angle is now about 15 degrees from the line of sight, whereas it can be much more than that. And over the next few years, they're going to actually come down, so we won't see the rings at all for a while, and then gradually open out again. But really, that's the only planet that you can easily see in the early weeks of November. Again, Mercury passes in front of the Sun on November the 9th, and I'll come back to that later in the highlights of the month. So really, there's not a lot of chance of seeing it early on. But amazingly, just 9 days later or so, you'll be able to pick it up. By about the 16th of the month, it'll be visible there just before dawn. And on the 25th, it actually reaches what's called western elongation, its greatest angular separation from the Sun, and we will be able to see it fairly easily low in the eastern sky about an hour before dawn. Again, Mars passed behind the Sun in late October. It'll be in the pre-dawn sky around the end of November, but again, hardly visible. Its angular size, just 4 arc seconds, barely bigger than the atmosphere makes a star image look like, so you won't see any details on the sort of salmon pink surface. So I'm afraid it's not a good month. Even Venus passed behind the Sun on the 27th of October, and you might just spot it after sunset at the very end of November. But to be honest, it's perhaps best to use the month looking at Saturn and some of the other objects in the sky that you can see with either binoculars or a small telescope. If you go to the Night Sky page on the Jodrell website, just put Night Sky into Google, it will in fact point you to all sorts of nice objects that you can see. Well, finally, are there any highlights in November? Well, there are a couple. Every year, around November 18th and 19th, the Earth passes close to the trails of the debris of a comet called Temple Tuttle. The meteors, or shooting stars that we see, appear to come from the constellation of Leo the Lion. So we call this shower the Leonid Meteor Shower. Now, obviously, if the comet has just gone past the Sun before we cross the trail of debris it leaves behind, we might expect to have a very prominent shower. And around 1999, 2000, 2001, the Leonids put on a very, very good show. Sadly now, in general, for quite some years, because it takes 33 years to go around the Sun, we're not going to see many Leonids in general, perhaps about 12 to 15 per hour. Some of them, however, can be quite bright, so it is actually worth looking for them. However, we have one chance of something better. Around 30 minutes, at 4:45 in the morning of the 19th, it is predicted that the Earth will cross a little trail of debris that was released by the comet quite some time ago. When that last happened in 1969, there were 200 meteors per hour seen for about 30 minutes. This year, it won't be as good, but you might just see a typical rate of 100 of an hour, which means that in the 30 minutes it takes us to cross that little stream of debris, we might see about 50 meteors. That could be quite good. So 4:45 UT on the morning of the 19th is a worthwhile time to get up and have a look. So that's one good thing to look at. Now, every so often, the two innermost planets of our solar system, Mercury and Venus, cross in front of the Sun. We call it a transit. Mercury does it quite often, Venus only twice per century. And we were privileged to see a transit of Venus some years ago, 2004. There's going to be another one in 2012. In fact, on November the 9th, 8th, 9th, we have, in fact, the last transit of Mercury that we can see until about 2016. Sadly, it will not be visible from Europe. Essentially, anywhere from the west coast of America to the east coast of Australia, and New Zealand, of course, can see the whole of the transit. From most of America, you'll see part, as you will from the rest of Australia and Japan and so on. It's around 11:12 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's when it starts. So have a look. If you live in that part of the world and are listening to this podcast, then it's a worthwhile thing to do on the 9th of November to look for the transit of Mercury. Now, of course, you must not look directly at the Sun with your eyes. It will damage your eyes. You wouldn't see it anyway. Mercury is quite small, so you need to make quite a good image of the Sun to see that it's happening. And the best way, perhaps, is to take just one half of a small pair of binoculars and use that to focus the Sun onto a piece of white card. Get an image about an inch or 2 inches across, and then I think you've got a chance of seeing it. That's exactly how I did it a few years ago at the last transit. So there's something for you to see, Mercury crossing in front of the Sun. And that's, of course, why we can't see Mercury in the sky for the next few weeks. It's basically between us and the Sun and only there in daylight. The only time you can see Mercury and Venus when they're that close is, of course, during a total eclipse, which is what we were able to see in the eclipse in March this year. So anyway, perhaps not the best month of the year, certainly for planets, but nevertheless, still a lot to look at, a lot to see. Have fun.